It's the monster. It's the monster.
You'd let whatever's out there walk right over us, wouldn't you? Well, some of us won't.
Creatures are on full display at Georgia Museum of Art's exhibit, The Monsters Are Due on Broad Street, Patrick Dean, celebrating works by the comic artist who worked at Flagpole from 1997 to 2006. Hillary Brown is director of communications at Georgia Museum of Art, and as a huge fan of Dean's work, also curated the exhibit.
Why the title? The title comes from an old Twilight Zone episode called The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, about a small town in which people hear that some monsters are coming. They freak out. They fight with each other. They kill people. The point is that they are the monsters, in fact. They thought there were some aliens coming or something, but they're the actual monsters. Patrick has done a lot of work on monsters in his career, but his monsters are very human monsters, and sometimes his people are kind of monster-y people, so it seemed like a really good choice for the title of the show.
Well, I guess what we need to do is run a check of the neighborhood and find out which ones of us are really human.
Dean's art is reminiscent of Jack Davis and Mad Magazine, a periodical which influenced his early work, but his most recent pieces feel both victorious and a little bit gloomy. In 2018, Dean was diagnosed with amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, which makes the timing of this show significant.
It seemed like we needed to do something fast, and luckily we had the space open in the museum. He agreed to do it, and we were able to pull it together pretty quickly. It just seemed important to do it while he was still alive, not so much to memorialize him as just to appreciate him and to show that he is loved and cared for in Athens.
Dean's work, housed in the Alonzo and Valley Dudley Gallery at the museum, is a collection that ranges from his studies at UGA to some of his most recent post-diagnosis pieces.
All the works in the show come from his collection. He still has a lot of his stuff, and it's really neatly organized in a few different sections. There's a section of early works that includes two prints he made when he was a student here at UGA, as well as a page from his thesis project called Monster Opera. It was a children's book. And then there's a section of flagpole covers. That's one of the things that he's best known for. Sometimes they capture a little bit more of the spirit of Athens to me, and that was really important, is sort of Athens and Patrick together in organizing this show. Then there's a small section of some of his comics, because those definitely needed to be in here and treated like the fine art that they are. And then there are a couple of his most recent works that are post-diagnosis. So he's still making art. It's a little slower than it was, but he's still making awesome, awesome art. And then he lent us a selection of his sketchbooks also, which are on view. The art is beautiful. It's neat to see how his work changed over time. That's one of the things I wanted to do in this show, is have really early work and really recent work, just so that you could get an idea of his full career.
The more intimate gallery is usually used for installations, like videos and audio presentations. So student graphic designers were drafted to create environmental graphics to draw museum goers.
We worked with a graphic design class, Julie Spivey's class, in the Lamar Dodd School of Art. They designed a font based on Patrick's handwriting, which we sent to him. They designed some of the vinyl text that opens the show, sort of the treatment for that, which is also somewhat based on his handwriting. And they created this stand-up monster thing, which you can put your face in and take your photo and be, in fact, a monster who's due on Broad Street.
Patrick regards his disease as a catalyst for his own monsterly transformation.
One of them shows him as Frankenstein's monster. That's one of my favorite pieces in the show. It's important because he's such a big Jack Davis fan, and Jack Davis is well known for his monster illustrations, especially for a sort of like 6-foot poster that he did of Frankenstein's monster. And so for Patrick to represent himself in that role, I think, is really interesting and powerful, and just you read a lot into it.
As his disease has progressed, Dean is forced to communicate with the help of a computerized speech device. I emailed him to ask how his disease has changed the way he works, and he said, quote, "I knew my artwork wouldn't be consistent because of the nature of the disease, so I began being personal and open about this illness. My fine motor skills were going downhill, and I lost the control I used to have, but it made me concentrate harder and slowed my drawing time. Over the past year, it's resulted in a new style." Dean remains upbeat and continues drawing. The exhibit even features a video of his new work process.
And then it closes with a video that his wife took of him drawing now and what his process is like, which again is pretty laborious, but I'm really glad that he still cares about making work.
Dean says, "Having a terminal illness has freed me up for drawing whatever I want. I don't have to hustle and impress anyone anymore." The exhibit is on view through March 29th, which, incidentally, is the weekend of the annual Fluke Festival, a mini-comics and zine festival which Patrick Dean and Robert Newsom have organized since 2002.
Fluke is the Athens mini-comics and zine festival that happens once a year. It's at the 40 Watt. There's always free cake, including vegan cake. That's one of the things it's notable for. So it is the same weekend that this show closes, done on purpose, so that people who are coming from out of town to that can have a chance to see this exhibition.
For Athens News Matters, I'm Kathy Bradbury.
I guess it was a meteor, honey.
The power's off.
I'll cut across the backyard, see if the power is still on Floral Street.
They don't want us to leave. That's why they shut everything off.
It's always that way in every story I've ever read about a ship landing from outer space.
Nobody could leave, except the people they'd sent down ahead of them.